VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't noticed, there is a world shakeup underway. Boris Johnson and many members of the parliament resigning from office in England. We have Naftali Bennett resigning as Prime Minister of Israel. The former Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, was assassinated. Just hours ago in Sri Lanka, the president resigned, just fled the country on a military plane as protesters stormed the prime minister's office. Holland is on the brink of civil war as the Netherlands have declared war on farmers. Russia's military action in Ukraine is now in its fifth month, where Moscow is saying, accept our terms or brace for the worse. The Vatican just announced last Friday that it has formally joined the Paris Climate Agreement, even with its underlying abortion and population control agenda. President Biden has sent our oil reserves to communist China as China continues to grow in influence. And in the United States, in a time when recruitment of military members is suffering and morale is low, Joe Biden's Pentagon has begun the purge of more than 60,000 U.S. soldiers who refused to take the shot. In addition, a shocking new poll from Rasmussen Reports reveals that 56% of Democrats say the Supreme Court now is a fundamentally racist institution. 67% say it's a fundamentally sexist institution that favors men over women. And 39% of Democrats say they would like to give the United Nations veto power over Supreme Court decisions, with 17% of Republicans agreeing. And as we continue to see inflation in the U.S. out of control, recently we have the White House director of the National Economic Council said during a CNN interview that American families who are suffering from historic gas prices needed to understand it was for the future of the liberal world order. Joining us today, we welcome back Alex Newman, an award-winning international freelance journalist, an author, a researcher, an educator, a consultant, senior editor for The New American, and contributes to other publications, the author of Crimes of the Educators and also Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. He is a founder of Liberty Sentinel. And Alex, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you, Jim.
Well, it's so hard to know where to begin, but with so much of the world in turmoil right now. But I'd like to let's start right here at home in the United States. I mean, giving veto power to the United Nations over Supreme Court decisions, and you couple that with the high-ranking Biden officials speaking of the future and the liberal world order. I mean, this should be astounding to many.
It is, and you know, for the people who haven't been paying attention for the last few years, I would imagine that a lot of this comes as a surprise. How did we get here, and how did it happen so quickly? The answer is this has been a long time coming. They've been quietly indoctrinating the children to accept these ideas, but that is ultimately their objective, is to turn the United Nations, I call it the United Abominations, into a sort of world government. They would have veto power over its member nations' policy decisions. In fact, many, many governments have been talking about for a long time turning the UN General Assembly into basically a sovereign parliament. The most recently departed head of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, repeatedly referred to the United Nations as the Parliament of Humanity. They basically have been moving in this direction for a very long time, and this was the objective from the very beginning. That's why I think it's so sad that people are surprised by this, but right at the very, very beginning, in 1950, the U.S. Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, who was critical in the creation of the U.N., published a book called War or Peace, and he actually said in that book that the ultimate objective is to turn this United Nations into what he described as a world federation or a world government, and he said the U.N. Charter was adequate for that task. So that's where they're going, and they have radicalized a pretty significant percentage of the population, not just in the United States, around the world, and I think that's going to be the next big threat. And notice they take this in incremental steps, Jim. In the European Union, I actually documented this process as it was happening. The EU, through a very illegitimate treaty just a few years ago, was able to grant itself the power to veto nations' own policies and nations' own budgets. So under the guise of financial stability and financial security, the EU has now usurped the authority over national budgets. And so if the national parliament of one of its member states passes a budget that the EU disapproves of, the EU has the authority to veto it, to stop it, and that's the model they want at the global level.
Well, and then you couple this with this White House director of the National Economic Council, I think it's Brian Deese. Some have said he's a shadow president. Any comment on that?
Well, he is a very influential individual, and I think it's clear that we have a shadow government. I mean, at this point, and I mean no disrespect to the president or the office of the president, but at this point, it's very clear that Joe Biden is not running things. Everybody has seen this. I'm not telling anybody anything that they don't know. He actually struggles to read his teleprompter. I mean, he says things like end of quote or repeat line. I mean, he's literally struggling to read the messages that they're putting in front of him. And so that leads to the question, well, if he's not in charge, who is actually coming up with these policy decisions? And that's a subject that I've been exploring for many, many years. I wrote a whole book on it, Deep State, the Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. And I think in this present administration, just like in the Obama administration, the Council on Foreign Relations is one of the key organizations that's involved. And what you'll find is many of the people setting the policies actually come from the Council on Foreign Relations. During the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton famously, in a speech at the Council on Foreign Relations, said that they were the ones who were telling her what she should be doing and how she should be thinking about the future. So you have a lot of these Obama holdovers and a lot of these shadowy elites from the Council on Foreign Relations and some of these other organizations that really are running the U.S. government, that really are setting policy. And they're very much, I would say, abusing Joe Biden as kind of just a puppet to read their preferred policies on national television.
So, friends, we're talking today about a world shakeup, and I started here at home because, I mean, when you talk about what's been known as the world superpower, all of a sudden ceding its sovereignty to the United Nations and a growing number of people saying, yes, we need to give them veto power over the Supreme Court and we need to, you know, make these sacrifices for the liberal world order, I think our ears should perk up. But, Alex, we're going to examine what's happening in other parts of the world, too. The resignation of Boris Johnson, I mean, what impact will this have in England?
Well, I think the issue with Boris Johnson, the reason I call it the predator class threw him under the bus is because he was just no longer useful for advancing their agenda. And that's what they do very frequently with puppet leaders. I saw a very funny meme of Klaus Schwab, and of course I don't mean to imply that Klaus Schwab is the mastermind behind all of this, although he certainly is a front man for the masterminds. But it's a very funny little meme. It's a cartoon, and Klaus Schwab has Boris Johnson on some marionette strings, and Boris Johnson's head has fallen off, and the Klaus Schwab figure says, oh, this one is broken. Somebody gets me another one. And so I think Boris Johnson has just outlived his usefulness. He's politically toxic. He's very unpopular. He's really not able to corral the Conservative Party to get policies through. And I think that's partly because he has been exposed. He ran as a conservative, and then he betrayed conservative voters over and over and over again on the green issues, on the sovereignty issues, on the Brexit issues. And, of course, the economy is collapsing. And so Boris Johnson has just simply outlived his usefulness. They'll find somebody else who they think will serve them better. But like you said, this is part of a global shakeup, and I think it all needs to be seen in that context.
And at the same time, we've got a resignation of the Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett. This is going to give another election there, but that adds to this world shakeup as well.
It does, yeah, and we've seen that now in Sri Lanka as well. We're going to see it, I think, in many more nations. And I think part of this is engineered. They recognize that the policies they are imposing on people are going to inevitably lead to a revolt, and I believe that's part of the plan. Sri Lanka is a really good example of this. They imposed all these unbelievable so-called green policies where you couldn't use fertilizer. And I mean, just unbelievable things. And, of course, the logical consequence of this, which anybody could have told you, anybody with any sense could have told you, is it's going to lead to food shortages. It's going to lead to a collapse of the agricultural system. You know, we can't produce enough food to feed a society today using the methods of hundreds of years ago. It's not possible. And so they recognize that as they tighten the screws, as they destroy our energy infrastructure, as they destroy our food supply, as they destroy the supply chains, that is inevitably going to lead people to be very angry. It's going to lead people to go out into the streets. And I think what they want to see is to have the public in these various nations, and we're kind of seeing that in Holland. I hope the farmers don't fall for the trap. I'm pleased with what I've seen so far. But they want people to overthrow their own government. They want what happened in Sri Lanka, where people invade the presidential palace and they blame their national leaders, because you can't build back better unless you tear everything down first. And so if they can get the public to blame their national institutions, their national governments, their nation states for the problems that they're suffering, and they can get the people themselves to destroy their own national institutions and their national constitutions and their own nation states, then that paves the way for regional governance and then ultimately global governance, which is where they want to go, which is where we started this program with UN veto power for nations.
Right. And you know, coupled with this, you mentioned here what's going on in the Netherlands and really the verge of civil war taking place there. But we're talking about an attack on farmers. We're talking about an attack, really, on the food supply for the nation. And we have to understand, you know, we're seeing lots of things happen here in the United States with all the production plants that and food suppliers, you know, the fires, the explosions, different things that are happening there. But the like matters are happening in other countries, too, with an attack on food supplies. We're going to see, you know, the shortage of grains from Ukraine, but now also in the Netherlands, a direct assault on farmers.
Absolutely. And I've actually been following this war on farmers for almost my entire journalistic career. And at first, I wasn't putting the pieces together. I was covering what was happening in Brazil. The communist government down there, under the guise of giving land back to Indians, was shutting entire villages. I think we did some of the exclusive reporting. Nobody in America was talking about this, but the previous government, not the current one, was ordering the military, some of them wearing UN helmets and UN insignia, to go into these villages and order these villagers to dismantle their own farms, dismantle their own homes. They were herding them into these favelas in the big cities. And the pretext for all this was giving land back to India. They were shutting hundreds of thousands of hectares of productive agricultural land. They were shutting it down. And the government said, we're going to give it back to Indians who, you know, maybe a few hundred years ago used to live here. Well, I got in touch with the chief of the Indian group that was supposed to be getting a lot of this land and interviewed him, and he said, that's ridiculous. Our people have never lived in this ecosystem. We're Indians of the forest, not Indians of the Cejado, which is the ecosystem where these farms were. And so he said, that's total baloney. They're not planning to give us back that land, and even if they were, it's not our land. They're just destroying the farmers. In South Africa, I documented this for many years. There was an actual war on farmers where they were encouraging the president of the country, Jacob Zuma, singing in front of stadiums full of people, bring me my machine gun. We're going to go shoot the Boers. The Boers, of course, are the farmers. Boer is Dutch word for Afrikaans word for farmer. And so you have the president of the country stirring up tens of thousands of people that we're going to go shoot the Boers. He said, bring me my machine gun. We're going to go shoot the farmers. And so what happened? Thousands of farmers were slaughtered. Then shortly after that, the government started talking about expropriation without compensation. We're going to go in and take these farms. By the way, these farms feed basically all of Africa. In China, I started reporting this in 2013. They were herding these peasants, hundreds of millions of them, by the way, who've lived there for centuries. Their families have been passing it down. They were herding them into the big city at gunpoint.
Wow.
And on the other side of the break, we can pick up there. So.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman with us here today. Website, thenewamerican.com. And we're talking about a shakeup taking place around the world. As we speak, we'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how many different races of men are there?
Actually, Chris, the Bible never uses the term race, except when it talks about the human race. Biblically, we all go back to Noah and we all go back to Adam. We're all descended from them and related to all the people of the earth. And you know, this is exactly what genetic studies of the different ethnic groups is showing. Every ethnic group is so genetically similar to the others that it's like we're all from the same family, almost clones. Chris, notice how well this evidence lines up with what the Bible has to say. We don't use scientific evidence to prove the Bible, but we can, by using the evidence, show just how right that Bible is. Aren't you glad we can go back to Genesis and get it right?
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Shakeup is underway around the world. Alex Newman with us here today, commenting on many of the issues that are underway as we speak. And it is an amazing way, especially when you take all the pieces of the puzzle and bring them together. Alex, you were just talking about China. We're talking about the food supply and the war that's going on and food supplies and so forth. Well, you were just introducing us to the China topic here just before the break.
So, yeah, in China, we saw a very similar war on farmers, where these farmers who occupied these lands for hundreds of years had been in the family, were being herded off of their small farms and into the big cities, that the government built these huge mega cities and basically told the farmers, look, we can do this the nice way. You go and we give you a little bit of money and you get a free apartment, or we'll do this the rough way and we'll just kill you or torture you or remove you by force. And so we saw that happening in China. And then, of course, in America, we see and have seen something very similar for a very long time. They've been using all sorts of different pretexts, saving an allegedly endangered animal here, stopping greenhouse gas emissions there. Most recently, we saw this SEC-proposed rule that's going to force public companies to report their so-called climate emissions, their greenhouse emissions, up and downstream, which the farmers have already been very clear. That's going to force the small and medium farmers to report their emissions if they want to be able to do business with big companies. They're not going to be able to afford that. That's going to bankrupt them. So we see this war on farmers progressing. In the Netherlands, of course, it came under the pretext of stopping nitrogen and saving certain types of plants. They're talking now about expropriating a lot of these farms. They're talking about forcing the farmers to cull at least a third of their cattle herds. Of course, Dutch farmers are some of the most productive in the world. Holland is one of the biggest agriculture exporters on the planet. And so this is a war on the food supply. It's a war on farmers. And I think what they want to do here, they've been very clear, they want to eliminate private land ownership, and they want to eliminate the small and independent agricultural producers who can operate outside the system and feed their communities and feed their families without depending on the central system. And the World Economic Forum is involved in this. In fact, the Netherlands is one of the food innovation hub capitals of the world. And I think ultimately what they want to do after they have brought all of agriculture and food production under centralized control, and I think it'll look very similar in China as it does in the United States if these people get their way. It'll be a hybrid of mega corporations and big government in total control of the food supply. What they want to do then is use food as a weapon. As Henry Kissinger, the former Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, outlined in 1974 in National Security Memo 200, where he talked about using food to coerce governments around the world to implement draconian population control policies. So this is all by design. The reason they're collapsing our food supply is because there are subversive purposes, and we need to put the dots together and realize this is not just things happening in a vacuum. There's a plan here. There's an agenda.
Yeah, there is an agenda. And again, I can't neglect what's happening in the U.S. We're talking about farmland, but the largest private owner of farmland is Bill Gates, some 270,000 acres under his ownership. And Alex, the battle that was happening in South Dakota, another 2,100 acres of farmland in North Dakota that he's purchasing. Is anyone taking notice of this?
Yeah, the people should be taking notice of this, and you can be sure Bill Gates doesn't plan to farm on this land. In fact, that he's one of the biggest investors in these Frankenfoods that they're creating. They are now developing and actually producing meat, and really we shouldn't call it meat. It's not. It's Frankenfood grown in a laboratory. They're now building the biggest insect protein production facility right outside Decatur in Illinois. And they want to, Bill Gates has been very clear about this, they want to eliminate beef and animals from our diet and shift us over to what they consider to be a sustainable diet. And there was actually, they kind of gave away the game on the land ownership years ago. And I want to just read this quote, Jim, if you don't mind. The first time the UN really outlined the vision for sustainable development was in the Brundtland Commission that was chaired by the former Norwegian prime minister. And that's where they first defined sustainable development. It was the report called Our Common Future. And there were several key meetings leading up to that where they were exploring these concepts. And the one that I want to mention was in 1976. It was held in Vancouver. And they released an official report after this meeting. This was a UN meeting. And it was called Habitat One. And here is what they said, word for word. I'm just reading the quote out of the report. Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth therefore contributes to social injustice. Hmm. So there they are telling you, you can't have these people owning their own land. We've got to get that under the control of the basically fascist state, the merger of corporate and government power, and that's where they're moving us toward, Jim.
Alex Newman is with us here today, folks. And Alex, I saw the article on The New American here just days ago, the headline, UN deletes article praising benefits of world hunger. I mean, kind of amazing that the UN is actually advocating this world hunger.
Yeah, and then later they had the nerve to claim, oh, that was just satire. Yeah, we didn't really mean there are benefits to hunger. But, you know, there's one American heading a UN agency. His name is David Beasley. He's from South Carolina, and he heads the World Food Program. And for years, I have been watching him and following him, and he has been telling people, folks, we're headed toward a global famine. We're headed toward, he actually described it as a famine of biblical proportions in 2020. So he's been sounding the alarm that the world is rushing headlong into a global food catastrophe, and yet the media is nowhere to be found broadcasting this man's very, very prescient warnings. So,
Alex, let's hit another issue here today, and that is Russia continuing to pummel Ukraine. Putin basically acting like, hey, you've not seen anything yet. It's agreed to our terms, or there's more to come. You know, we've only begun. And we also have the Ukrainian President Zelensky saying, West, you know, you're going to owe us these billions of dollars to rebuild here. So give us your perspective on what's taking place as the world is being shaken up, even with the continued confrontations and the war here with Russia, Ukraine.
Yeah, I've been highlighting what I view as Putin's role in the New World Order since 2014 is when I did my first deep dive into it. And so I've written and spoken very extensively on this subject. I think what's going to happen as a result of the war in Ukraine is really the final shift from what the elites, from what the deep state calls the unipolar world order, into what they describe as a multipolar world order. Now, the Council on Foreign Relations has been talking about this for over a decade, and their idea was that we can't have this unipolar world order forever, this place, this global system where the United States is the global hegemonic, unchallengeable superpower, and we need to move toward this new system where lots of different governments would also have an equal seat at the table, and they have Communist China and Russia, South Africa, Brazil, governments like this in mind. And, you know, on the surface, it looks like, oh, hey, the United States is backing Ukraine, the West is backing Ukraine, and Putin is, you know, rising up against them and turning the tide. I think it's actually a very misleading narrative. And I actually predicted, even before the war started, that the war would start and that it was going to lead to really fundamental changes in the geopolitical system. And actually, I've been saying since the war broke out that by the time this was all over, it was going to look like the biggest own goal ever scored by any government in history. And the own goal, of course, could have been scored by the Biden administration. And unfortunately, that is what's coming to pass. If you look, for example, at Russia's currency, they put all these sanctions on and they said, oh, that's really going to hurt Russia. Quite ironically, Russia actually has the strongest currency of 2022 so far.
And let me just interject here, because last week, and we're going to have you continue on here, but data released by the Census Bureau here in the U.S., that the U.S. sold Russia in exports during May alone $77.4 million. That's what we sold to them. But we purchased from Russia over $1.1 trillion in imports. We have a trade deficit of over $1 trillion with Russia in this time of sanctions. That's staggering.
It is. It is. And of course, the Russians and the Communist Chinese are our partners and have been partners all along. And that's not a theory or something going on behind the scenes. They're very open about this. They're both involved in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and many others. They are partners, essentially. And what you have is the Biden administration deliberately shutting down the American economy, destroying our energy infrastructure, causing skyrocketing prices in energy, and that leads inevitably to companies saying, we can't do business in the United States anymore. We can't compete in an international market when we're paying 2, 3, 4, 10 times what a factory in China would pay for energy and many times more for labor costs and complying with regulations and things. So what's happening here is the orchestrated and planned destruction of the U.S. economy and the shifting of our remaining productive capacity over to places like China and even over to Russia. incidentally. And this, again, is part of the shift from the unipolar world order to the multipolar world order, where communist China and Russia and other powers will have a much, much greater say.
And speaking of communist China here, too, we've got the Biden administration sending oil. Alex, he opened up the U.S. strategic reserves, but sending oil to communist China, going to a Chinese-owned company that we understand has ties to Hunter Biden, other oil going to the Netherlands, some to India, other places as well. I mean, I look at this and it says, you know, this is here for our protection, strategic oil reserves. What are we? Isn't this an abuse of that?
It's beyond an abuse. I would say this is criminal. The reason we have the strategic reserve is in case of a crisis. And we are now rushing headlong into multiple crises. I mean, there are multiple tsunamis headed towards America right now as we speak that are going, each one on their own would be catastrophic. When they all hit us at the same time, it's going to be probably, turbulence like most Americans have not experienced in their lifetimes. We've got the currency crisis, the economic crisis, we've got the food crisis, we've got the political crisis, all these things rushing toward us like tsunamis. And the purpose of the strategic reserve is to help us deal with crises like that. Well, the Biden administration is getting rid of that, selling it, incidentally, to hostile nations, strategic enemies of the United States. You can't tell me that this is not deliberate, that this is not by design. It's criminal, in my opinion.
Yeah. How much more is there? I mean, are we not depleting our supplies?
We are. And I think, again, it's strategic, right? There's a right strategy behind the depletion of our strategic reserves.
Let's hit another issue, and that is the Vatican joining the Paris Climate Accord, even with its pro-abortion, you know, advancements in the Climate Accord. Does that shock you that the Vatican's joining on, or is that just something that's expected by positions the Vatican has taken?
Yeah, it's very bizarre to see this, and I come from Catholic family, and I can tell you, even my Catholic—I'm no longer Catholic—but even my Catholic family members have expressed absolute shock and horror at the actions and the statements of this Pope Francis. It truly is a sight to behold, and you're right. Traditionally, the Catholic Church has publicly resisted abortion and population control, even contraception, and yet here you have them just jumping into bed with people who have made abortion and contraception and population control a centerpiece of the very climate agenda that they claim to be tackling. So I'm not surprised by this. But I think we should be very alarmed. And actually, a few years ago, I came on your program, Jim, and we talked about the World Parliament of Religions
yes.
for Peace.
Yeah.
And the Catholic Church is helping to head up this new global system transformation on the religious front.
Wow. Folks, we're just seconds from another break, so we'll take the break. And I've got a few more measures I'm going to have Alex comment on here as well. But what we're seeing is a world that is under shakeup right now. And as Alex described this as tsunamis that are starting up and all coming soon to crash all at one time here. And certainly the victim is the sovereignty of our nation and the surrendering of our sovereignty to this new liberal order, the Great Reset, a new world order. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America. Stay with us.
Having to prove the existence of God to an atheist is like having to prove the existence of the sun at noon on a clear day. Yet millions are embracing the foolishness of atheism. Now from Ray Comfort comes The Atheist Delusion. This 60-minute DVD pulls back the curtain and reveals what is going on in the mind of those who deny the obvious. It introduces you to a number of atheists who you'll follow as they go where the evidence leads, find a roadblock, and enter into a place of honesty that is rarely seen on film. You'll hear the compelling questions that cause them to doubt their atheism. You can obtain one copy of The Atheist Delusion for a donation of $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25 by calling 1-800-729-9829. Simply call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
friends, even every one of these topics here today, every one of these angles that we're bringing up about the shakeup of the world is a program in and of themselves. When you combine them all together, you really get a picture of what's taking place around the world. Alex Newman is with us today. And Alex, right now we've got Joe Biden, who's over in the Middle East with stops that are going to be taking place, Israel landing there here, and then also with different Arab leaders as well. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. But the Trump policies in with Israel are seeming to be thrown out the window here from the Biden administration.
Yeah, and it seems like, and we saw this very early on in the administration, that all of the great policies that Donald Trump implemented as president were reversed just about as quickly as they could. In fact, he had the big ceremonies on day one where he blocked the Keystone XL pipeline, where he undid a lot of the orders and regulations that Trump had put in or gotten rid of. He rejoined a bunch of international institutions like the World Health Organization and other UN programs, also the climate agreement negotiated in Paris. So this is a continuation of that, I think, where basically they're just getting rid of all of the pro-America policies that Donald Trump brought in and replacing them with anti-America policies.
Yeah, and what's interesting, you mentioned the pipeline there against it here in the U.S., but yet he's helping Canada reestablish this Russian pipeline after killing the U.S. pipeline. I mean, it's just bizarre. Let's bring it back home to the United States again, because we're certainly in great turmoil. We're in great trouble, and we see this war front that's taking place, and we're doing a couple things with our military. We're surrendering, or they're really, surrendering our military to being, ready for defense and subjecting them to things like CRT and right pronoun training and so forth. And now we have this purging going on of our military, some 60,000 who don't want to take the shot. And we're saying we're stopping your pay, stopping your benefits, time to leave the military.
Yeah, and I think this goes right along with everything else that we've been talking about. At a time when war is breaking out around the world, when rivals of the United States, enemies of freedom, enemies of the United States are expanding their militaries, are training their militaries for war, and of course I'm talking about communist China and others. We've got Taiwan under mortal threat, even Japan, the Philippines, I think they're at great risk of becoming the next Hong Kong. Meanwhile, we've got the U.S. government practically waging war on our military. And I've talked to multiple men from the services who are being driven out because they won't take these injections, because they don't want to comply with these bizarre new social policies where they're being ordered to shower with members of the opposite sex. It's almost like he couldn't do a better job of destroying our military if he tried. And I can hardly think of a more dangerous time in recent memory to have gone to war with our military. And again, I have to conclude that this is strategic, this is deliberate. These people are not stupid. There are many things, but they're not stupid.
One of the things that one would say it's a different topic, but I really believe there's a tie-in, and that is the indoctrinators of our nation's children. And when we see the policy statements that are coming out from the NEA, I mean, certainly they're promoting global governance as well, but also publicly standing in defense of abortion. They're fine with the experimentation of homosexual transgender ideology in the classrooms. But the indoctrinators of our nation's children is changing the mindset, Alex, of the millennials, as they're raised up in this system and really becoming an anti-American, pro-global mindset as they're being, subject to this indoctrination.
Yeah, and that was the plan all along. The United Nations has been pretty transparent about that. In fact, in 1992, when George H.W. Bush, Mr. New World Order, signed up to Agenda 21, which was the original global agreement on sustainable development, I encourage people to verify what I'm saying. Go to Chapter 36 of Agenda 21, and you'll find it all laid out. They make very clear there that education is a critical component of ushering in this sustainable world order, and that every child in every school on the planet needs to have their values, attitudes, beliefs, and even their behaviors changed. They say that this new global education system is going to have to focus on spirituality education, which, by the way, means something very, very different than what a Christian might think of, right? That doesn't mean they're going to teach them the Ten Commandments or the Lord's Prayer or the gospel. In fact, it's much, much darker. And again, they've been doing this out in the open for a long time. Common Core was the first national set of standards in America, and they bragged all along that this was going to get the United States entangled with the international standards. So I think education has been probably the most important weapon that they have used to transform the younger generation. Obama famously called the older people the bitter clingers. They're clinging to their guns and their religion, and they don't want to go along with it. Yeah. So they know that most older Americans will not submit to this, but they fully expect to indoctrinate the overwhelming majority of children around the world. And that's their secret plan.
We have done a full program on your book, Crimes of the Educators, but this book really explores going into this aspect so much more to see the whole history of the educational system. Alex, for those who'd like to obtain a copy, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, it is available at Amazon. So that's Amazon.com. They have it. And if you prefer not to use Amazon, which I do my best not to use them, you can also get it from my own website, libertysentinel.org/shop. That's libertysentinel.org/shop. And I'll send you a signed copy.
Great. Again, libertysentinel.org/shot for that book, Crimes of the Educators. Friends, we're talking about world shakeup today and taking your phone calls. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. And Alex, as we're waiting for those first calls here, I never brought up the assassination of the former prime minister of Japan, a very significant event taking place as well, as he was a well-known critic of communist China.
Yes, he was. And in fact, he had been sounding the alarm about the need for Japan to rebuild its military to protect against Chinese aggression. He had been sounding the alarm about Communist China's ambitions to enslave the people of Taiwan. And the Communist Chinese government actually threatened a bloodbath if he didn't cut it out. And, you know, as of now, we don't have any smoking gun proof that this was the Communist Chinese. I certainly think they need to be viewed as prime suspects.
And as we talk about the shakeup, Alex, how do we get back on track? Is there a path forward for us to get back on track as a nation and as a world?
Well, it may sound cliche, but the answer to all these questions is Christ and the gospel and the Word of God.
Yeah.
if we continue to ignore God's instructions for government, for family, for business, for the economy, we will continue to reap what we sow, and that'll be chaos and lawlessness and disorder and hunger and the other things. I think if we're going to get back on track here in America, it's going to require repentance. It's going to require a turning back to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's going to require prayer, and it's going to require a reemergence of biblical values, biblical beliefs, biblical morality. And, you know, absent divine intervention, I don't see any other way for us to get back on track. There may be no getting back on track. We'll have to see what God has planned. I fully believe in the sovereignty of God.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think the only way to restore sanity to our society is to go back to a true understanding and a living out of what the Bible teaches.
Indeed. And ladies and gentlemen, rest assured, what God has before decreed will come to pass. Alex Newman with us today. Our phone lines are packed. Let's begin with Christine. Hi, Christine. You're on the air.
Hi, Alex. Thank you again for your fine work. I am wondering if I try to give out this information as often as I can, but I find that, in fact, I use this information to try to give the gospel, because there is no hope in this world and in our government.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. The world government's nefarious, dark, draconian. But, I mean, I find that Christians are the ones that they don't want to hear it and to expose the unfruitful works of darkness. I mean, am I off base that we should be calling as many leaders as we can to try to stop these things?
Thank you, Christine.
I think it's absolutely critical, Christine. In fact, I think part of the reason why we're in the mess that we're in is that pastors and the shepherds of the church have not been teaching the whole counsel of God to their congregations. We've bought into these myths that Jesus is only the Lord of our Sunday mornings, and that we don't talk about him outside of the four walls of church. And, Jesus has no role in our government and no role in our families, no role in our businesses. We've got to keep our politics and our business separate from our faith. And I think that's a big problem. I think as Christians, Jesus Christ should be the Lord of every part of our lives. And I love what you said, Christine. We should be using these current events. We should be using the turmoil in the world. And I think we're going to have many opportunities in the months and years ahead to bring people to Christ, to share the love of Christ, to share the light of the gospel, and to show people there are solutions to this. We don't need to succumb to the confusion. In fact, in Ephesians 6, which I quote so frequently, we learn that we're not battling against flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. These are powers, principalities, spiritual wickedness in high places. And we learn that our primary weapon in this battle is the Word of God, the sword of the Spirit. And so we must take this opportunity and use the Bible to go out and say, look, there are answers to these things, there are solutions to these things, there are opportunities here for the advancement of the gospel, for the advancement of the kingdom, and we need to seize those as Christians. That's our job.
Friends, circle the date. If you're in southeast Wisconsin, circle the date of September 17th on your calendar. Alex Newman will be speaking at a VCY rally at the Waukesha Expo. You'll find more info at vcyamerica.org. We will be broadcasting that over our network live as well on that Saturday evening, September 17th. Let's go to Brian next. Racine, Wisconsin. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi there. My question had to do with that World Economic Forum and how it's controlling the economic system. I heard that China called Soros the devil last year, and I know right after they called him the devil that there seemed to be a lot of economic tightening of the belt over there. Are they trying to bring them in line to what they want to see? Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Great question. And as it happens, over the weekend, I gave a major speech on the role of communist China in the New World Order. And one of the video clips I played, I like to bring the evidence, was George Soros. This was about a decade ago, saying that communist China needs to own the New World Order in the same way that the United States owned the current or the previous World Order. He also said publicly, when he was getting his Globalist of the Year award in 2010 or 11, I believe, that China had a better functioning government and a better economy than the United States. I view communist China as really a creation of what I call the deep state elites in the United States, and I think the evidence for that is overwhelming. But we're dealing with evil here, and what you see with evil is that they'll be happy to collaborate with each other, but there very often comes a time where they turn on each other. I don't think we've come to that time yet, but I usually use a Stalin as an example. Out of Stalin's 34 top deputies, only three, maybe four, died a natural death. The vast majority were executed in purges.
Wow.
So what happens is it's very much like with mafia bosses, except they're worse than mafia bosses. At least mafia bosses don't shoot each other's wives and children, right? They have some basic ethical standards. But when you're dealing with evil at this high level, they'll collaborate as long as they think it's useful, and then occasionally they'll turn on each other. So I still believe that communist China is right at the heart of this agenda for the one-world system. But at some point, there may very well be a rupture. You know, the communist Chinese don't want to see themselves as pawns in a game, and certainly the globalist deep staters here in the United States don't want to see themselves as pawns. And so that may break out into open fighting at some point, but I think right now the evidence that they're collaborating and working together is very clear.
Friends, Alex Newman with us here today. Websites, thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. We're just seconds from the break, so we'll take the break. We'll come back with more of your calls here in just a moment. So, Ken, hang on the line, please. We'll be with you shortly. Jim, also, and Danny, stay with us. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. Here on Crosstalk on VCY America, our topic today, World Shakeup.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Recently, a caller to my program cautioned Christians about being patriotic, confusing it with nationalism. Let me make something very clear. Oftentimes, the word nationalism can be intertwined with the word patriotism. But you have to understand, there's a good nationalism and a bad nationalism. The good nationalism recognizes national sovereignty, borders, our own currency, our own laws, our own history, our own culture. Then there's the bad nationalism, like Adolf Hitler or Mussolini. The state is of primary importance. Don't confuse patriotism, which is about understanding the Constitutional Republic of America, the laws of nature and nature's God, and thus saith the Lord, with the bad nationalism. The liberals and globalists want you to do that, so you stop practicing patriotism. The defense of God-given rights and morals.
Alex Newman is our guest here today from thenewamerican.com. You'll find many, many helpful articles that they write through their monthly magazine. And our topic today, though, is world shakeup and just pulling together so many things from around the world. We're going next to Dallas, Texas, and Ken is calling. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Thank you, Jim, for taking my call. And I had a question for Alex.
Yes.
Yes, I wanted to find out. I had met with Mr. Mayor Thompson, Linda, back in the 80s, and he was begging for help from South Africa. He was the largest mayor of the township in Algora Park, South Africa, and he said it was all communism. But he wasn't himself talking about it, but later on I heard the word used called the Mandela Agenda, and I believe it was President Obama that used that word. And I'm just wondering if that's the same connection with the killing of farmers in South Africa.
Hmm. Thank you.
And
Ken.
Oh, I just had one other point. I went to a meeting at our church, and there was a missionary that was supporting Mandela, and he said that, well, Mandela's a Christian because he took communion in prison with the rest of them. And I said, well, that doesn't make you a Christian if
right.
you take communion. But I just wanted to know what his status was at that time, if you knew about being a Christian or not.
Okay. So, Alex, a couple of things there. Mandela Agenda, part of his question there.
Yeah, you know, I wish we had a whole episode to discuss this. I used to live in South Africa. It's a subject that has been incredibly interesting to me. I'll start off by saying, you know, whether Mandela eventually became a Christian, I don't know. But the Bible says, by their fruit ye shall know them. And the fruit of Mandela was very obvious. It was terrorism, right? He was actually the head of the terrorist wing of the African National Congress, which was a Soviet front group. Him and his fellow MK operatives were responsible for huge numbers of deaths. They were bombing roads, bombing nightclubs, bombing bars. His wife, Winnie Mandela, famously was caught on camera talking about how they were going to liberate South Africa with necklaces, which is where they soaked these tires in petrol and then light them on fire on top of somebody's head so that it melts. I mean, it's one of the most horrific ways to die you can imagine. And, of course, we also know, because after this was widely suspected, but after he died, both the Communist Party of South Africa and the African National Congress publicly admitted that Mandela had been not just a member of the Communist Party, but a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, which was a tentacle of the Soviet Union. And so I do not believe Mandela was a Christian. That's between him and the Lord, of course. But what happened in South Africa was a communist revolution disguised as a struggle for racial justice. That's not to say there was no injustice in South Africa prior to the revolution. It's to say that the revolutionaries will find or create or exploit any issue to advance the revolution. That was what the Students for Democratic Society used to say in the 60s. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution, whether it's climate change or racial justice or whatever it is. That's not what they care about. They care about the revolution. And I actually think South Africa is a very, very useful case study for Americans, because I think what happened in South Africa is basically a microcosm of what they want to do to the United States and what they want to do to the Church of Jesus Christ, the true Church of Jesus Christ, and that is subsume us under a government where we will have basically no say and where we can be abused, have our lands expropriated, and be torn down at will without any means of resistance.
Ken, thank you. We appreciate the call here, Ken. And as Alex said, wish we had a full program. We've got just minutes left. Jim in Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Yes. I want to share something with probably thousands and thousands of listeners that I haven't shared with too many people. And it's the day after the 2020 presidential election. When I woke up and I saw the results, my heart was so burdened that I wept like I've never wept in my whole life before, for my nation and for those around me that are not serving the Lord. And that's what this nation needs to do. We need to humble ourselves and pray and get ourselves holy and quit sinning. But I just want to, I believe, I want to ask your your guest, do you believe that that election was actually stolen from President Trump, and so that all this bad could have come to place?
Okay, thank you. Alex?
No doubt in my mind. I mean, it's just not even a question. Yes, they stole the election. But ultimately, you know, I still believe God is in charge, and so I have to believe that God, at the very least, allowed that to happen. Mm-hmm. And I won't claim to understand why God would have allowed that to happen. You know, I have my own theories based on, you know, my knowledge of God from the scriptures. But to me, it's crystal clear they stole the election. It was blatant. It almost seemed like they wanted us to know that they stole the election for whatever reason. And so, yes, they stole it, and I hope in 2022 we can do a better job of having election security, but we must be clear that that election was a fraud, and I think everybody, in fact, the polling data shows most Americans know that. It's just a question of, you know, what do we do about it now? And a lot of people are telling us to just move on and get on to the next election. I think that would be a mistake. I think we need justice and accountability, or it's going to happen again.
Thank you, Jim, for the call. We're going to squeeze Danny in from Kentucky. Danny, you're on the air.
Okay. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Fine.
I have a question for your guest, Alex. As a United States citizen with the food shortages around the world, say on a scale of 0 to 10, how important is it for Americans to start storing up food, buying food, water, possibly medical supplies? Because we know that this administration is a stolen administration, should we continue to store up food, buy food?
Okay, tell you what, I'm going to cut you off there. We've got the gist of your question, but Alex, we're down to 40 seconds here. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I think one thing we don't want to do is panic. We know that the Lord can feed us and will feed us, but I think we have an excellent opportunity to minister to others here who are desperate. And so I personally have stored some extra food. I encourage others to pray about it, and if God calls you to do that as well. Not because we're scared. The Lord didn't send us a spirit of fear, but because it gives us a great opportunity to minister to our neighbors and the people in our communities when times get tough.
Mm, great. Thank you for the question here, Danny. Alex Newman, our guest here today, and the world shakeup, and folks, we've just but scratched the surface. There is so much that's going on, and Alex, I know you're trying to keep people informed through the New American.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate it. God bless you.
Great. And folks, again, the website is thenewamerican.com, and they cover a number of stories and issues that you're just not going to get from the mainstream media, but will certainly keep you informed on many, many critical issues. And just a reminder, God is in control. We can trust him, but let's stay faithful until he comes again. Not throw up our arms in despair, but let's be salt. Let's be light. Let's share the good news of the gospel, the life-changing message of the gospel. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.